This is the Pretentious Wrestling Podcast, a production of ProWrestling.net. I'm Will, he's Jake. You can follow us on Twitter at Will Pruitt and at Barnett Jake. On today's show, Will and Jake preview NXT TakeOver, San Antonio, headlined by Shinsuke Nakamura versus Bobby Roode. It is Royal Rumble weekend, easily one of the most exciting times to be a wrestling fan. Get all of the wrestling news and information that you need along with audio reviews of the NXT TakeOver show, the Royal Rumble show, Raw, SmackDown, etc., etc. with ProWrestling.net membership. Also get the exclusive ProWrestling.net weekly show that often breaks first-run news you're not going to hear or find anywhere else. Find it all at ProWrestling.net. Click on the membership link, and for as low as $5.50 a month, if you take the annual option, lock it into the next Rumble, or $7.50 a month, you can enjoy ProWrestling.net membership. So, Jake, it's an exciting weekend in wrestling, right? We've got NXT TakeOver San Antonio. We've got the Rumble. I know you're going to be at one or both of these shows. What are you doing this weekend?
I will be just at the Rumble. Tempted to go to TakeOver, but my wife is the one who is going to be tagging along with me this weekend, and she just couldn't bring herself to do two nights of wrestling in a row.
I've legit heard that from my wife as well. When I'm like, hey, I'm going on this like long weekend. You want to come and see these three shows? She's like, pick one and I'll go.
Yeah. 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 Because the Rumble is, I mean, with the pre-show, they're already on schedule for 6 hours. And I'm not even sure we're going to be there for the pre-show. I think we're probably just going to try to sneak in pretty close to the show kicking off. Just try to catch the last pre-show match or maybe the last hour of the pre-show. I don't know. But it's a long time to spend, especially for her when it's not like, you know, something she's passionate about. So it's a tough sell. This is what I imagine a lot of people go through when they decide to go to one of these shows and they're not hardcore fans. You know, it's difficult to dedicate the kind of time that's required to be a core wrestling fan these days.
Well, do you remember sitting through WrestleMania, like how you and I felt, basically obsessed wrestling fans, felt sitting there at the end of what, the 7 hour WrestleMania?
By the time the main event came around, we were literally just waiting for to head to the exits. It was pretty brutal. I mean, we were there a long time. I mean, it took a long time for us to get in, but you know, I think we even getting into the show kind of late, it was almost 5 hours. It was a long time.
And again, thank you for letting me head in early so I could experience Brie Bella's last match. would have never forgiven you had I missed that.
Hilarious. So
we are here today to talk about NXT TakeOver San Antonio. A question for you first, Jake. I expressed this on Twitter a little bit ago. How do you feel about the fact that TakeOvers now tend to reside in big arenas and happen on the backs of the big WWE pay-per-views? Basically, if you have a Big Four pay-per-view now, you're having a TakeOver the night before. Do you enjoy this? Do you not like it? Where do you fall on this?
You know, it's in the Freeman Coliseum in San Antonio. I mean, it's not the Alamo Dome. Thank God they didn't try to pack that for
that
a NXT show. But, you know, for wrestling, I think it's just under 12,000 people. So it's not gigantic. And I mean, I don't mind having it kind of coincide with a Big Four pay-per-view. Honestly, you know, getting more for people to do when they're coming into town for a major pay-per-view like the Rumble or something that people do travel for, I think it's okay. I mean, it's good marketing. It keeps people busy with WWE all weekend. It's more promotion for them to do while they're in town. I mean, I get why WWE plans it this way. I mean, as a fan who just, you know, struggles to keep up with the shows at times, you know, with all the hours of television that it entails, I think it does get to be a bit exhausting. But, you know, if you're going for the live experience and you're a big fan, I see it as a huge benefit in that regard.
And I totally see that. I would almost rather have, hey, a big NXT house show that night before to give people a reason to travel in a night earlier, give something to fans who traveled in. As someone that watches at home on TV, I find often that I have forgotten about what happened at TakeOver by the end of Raw on Monday. And it becomes a trek then for me to remember, or it becomes work for me to
recall it. It makes the takeover for me feel a little bit less special. I know that's not for everyone. I'm not saying go back to takeovers at Full Sail because I can only take so much of that crowd at a time. But I don't know. It's not my favorite thing. I think you have a much better argument for this one, though.
I mean, this one especially. I think it's this is probably the weakest one that I can recall. I mean, I think
this one feels very new NXT to me.
Yeah, I mean, they just haven't built up the talent involved. Of course, they have Nakamura and Rude is involved, and DIY is big for NXT and Asuka. But I mean, you know, you got the two opening. Well, I guess there's what, five matches advertised for this show, I think.
Yes,
if I'm counting correctly. You know, the two of them have had very little build, if anything. I think the women's match might have had the strongest one, you know, set up for this show. I mean, it's a bit difficult to sell on this being a 3-hour show. I mean, you're probably looking at them adding, you know, additional matches the night of that aren't going to be that hot at all because they're going to have no build. I mean, it's going to be a tough one to sit through if you're somebody who came into town for the Rumble and is like, do I pay the astronomical price they're getting for NXT tickets these days? It's tough. So I understand your point. Like it's tough to sit through 3 hours on Saturday, at least 4 hours on Sunday, and then you're talking about 10 hours by the time you get through the end of Raw. I mean, it's easy to see why somebody might forget.
And a cursory glance at the StubHub shows that secondary market tickets right now are going for $25.
Yikes. So,
if you are into watching this show, know that you're not going to have to pay NXT Dallas prices for your secondary market tickets.
I guess that's the benefit of selling out or not selling out. I mean, you know, being in a larger arena, because I think the Dallas show
was 6,000. Yeah.
And this is 11. So clearly, you know, once they get out past 5,000 people, it's a tough sell, unless it's a really hot show. And this one certainly is not.
Yeah. So let's start from the bottom and we'll work our way to the Nakamura versus Rude main event. Roderick Strong versus Andrade Almas. This morning was watching this past week's NXT and I liked the final angle they did going into this match. I think Almas probably wins this one. I don't feel like it's Strong's moment yet in NXT. And you can keep that really kind of dynamic and fun Almas character going as he seems to be inhabiting his former Los Ingobernables self.
Yeah, I think the angle on NXT was okay. I mean, the build is barely there. You know, it's just we've only seen very little from these two to set up this match. I mean, I guess the best you can hope for is that, you know, they're given enough time and based on the length of the show and how many matches there are advertised, there's no reason they shouldn't get a good chunk of time. You know, they can have a pretty great match together. You know, they're both very talented. And so that's kind of what you have to hope for here, that we're going to see a surprisingly good match that they can use to springboard off into, you know, subsequent return matches. I think that's probably where they're going, and I think Almas winning sets that up better than Strong winning. So that would be my pick as well.
Moving on to Eric Young versus Ty Dillinger. This seems to be the spot for Dillinger to get a big win. I think Young could take it with that sanity group behind him. Eric Young's promos on NXT have been really weird for me. I don't like the voice he uses, but that's just me. But I know I'm kind of picking a heel-heavy show, Actually, I'm not here. I'm going to go with Dillinger and say he also enters the Rumble at 10 the next night, gets the big surprise, and hopefully right after they retool his character so he could actually be something meaningful beyond a number.
Yeah, I guess I don't know whether he would be – was there 8 unannounced spots for the Rumble? I think they have 22 people advertised, and so we're going to get – 8 surprise entrants at this point. So that should be fun. And Dillinger could very well be one of them. I do think he gets the win here. They had the match set up by having Sanity attack him, essentially. And we've seen this match before, although it was pretty brief on NXT a few weeks ago, back in, I think it was back in December when they were setting up the number one contendership. So I think they'll work well together. I think Young and Sanity have, you know, have been, you know, they've been okay. I mean, I guess I'm not a huge fan of the concept behind the act in general, but I think their performances have been good inside the framework that they've set up for them. And I'm with you on Young's promos. They are kind of bizarre at times, but I think, you know, being what they've been handed from creative, I think they've done an okay job executing it. But I think Ty gets the win and heads on, hopefully, to Raw. But I don't know. I mean, it was one of those difficult things to predict, because it's like, well, do they already have a character in mind for him? Are they going to have him do the, you know, the perfect 10 gimmick and then, you know, have a big loss that sets up a character change? Or, you know, how do you get from point A to point B? That's the part that remains kind of cloudy for me.
And it remains kind of a glaring thing in the NXT development system. A lot of times guys come up to the main roster with one gimmick, with one idea behind them, and WWE doesn't always have a way to translate that one idea from point A to point B. They don't have a way for that character to grow and change. They don't seem to expect it or want it, which is really strange. And I think Ty Dillinger is a really big example of how poor that developmental system can be sometimes. Moving on to a four-way match for the NXT Women's Championship. Asuka defending her title against Nikki Cross and the odd almost team of Billie Kay and Peyton Royce. I kind of want to see Billie Kay and or Peyton Royce win the NXT Women's Championship here. I think they've booked themselves into a corner with Asuka being the unbeatable monster of the division, and Asuka going back on the chase because she was cheated in a multiple-person match feels like it makes sense to me. It also gives you a big chase and a big thing for her for WrestleMania weekend, which they've kind of lacked. She hasn't been on the hunt, essentially. And it would also allow you to tell a story going into that weekend, say, with Asuka and Ember Moon having to face off for the number one contendership.
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting idea. I don't know if they're necessarily prepared to have Asuka lose here. I mean, she has been booked as a monster, and nobody has been able to sort of penetrate that shield of invulnerability. I mean, she was throwing around male security guards and stuff on the last episode of NXT, during the melee that set up this match. It really would have to be, you know, Billie Kay and Peyton Royce, set up some kind of either a crazy interference finish or, you know, distraction, or, you know, they get a pinfall while Asuka is unable to to get back in the ring in time. You know, they would have to find a way to keep Asuka away from the finish entirely to make it seem credible. So I'm not sure exactly how they'll get there, but it is an interesting idea to put her back on the chase. I just don't know if they have someone in mind that she could chase that would make the match feel satisfying in the end. So I think they do have their work cut out for them in that regard. I mean, I guess I was sort of thinking in my head that they would eventually sort of break Ember Moon away from this sort of holding pattern that she's been in as a competitor on the show. With, you know, they've kind of kept them apart, but it's about time, you know, they start moving pieces together, you know, to build towards the next takeover show in Orlando, which is going to be around WrestleMania. And I'm assuming they'll try to make their biggest show of the year.
What if they tried to do, say, Billie Kay wins the title, she goes on to face Ember Moon in Orlando, and then maybe you have Peyton Royce against Asuka as well on that show, with Asuka out for revenge? I could see something like that, and to me it'd be a way to kind of separate and diversify your assets a little bit, and also get four key women into major spots on these shows. Because I will say, in the NXT women's division, one of the big issues that they ran into as Sasha, Becky, Charlotte, and Bayley all left was the lack, and Nia Jax and Alexa Bliss and Carmella, like the lack of a developed undercard in that division. And I think it's something they're dealing with even today.
Certainly. Yeah. I mean, are they going to keep Asuka in NXT, you know, for the majority of this year? Are they going to, you know, have her dethroned by somebody who comes into the company for the women's tournament? It's difficult to see which direction, you know, they'll go. If they're going to just, you know, if they're going to wait until they have that tournament and then move, you know, some of those signed wrestlers into NXT to sort of fill in that show, and then they can graduate a couple of people. I mean, there's a lot of options on the table. It's just a matter of figuring out the timing. But I mean, I don't know if I'm going to predict Asuka to lose here, but if they do, you know, if they do pull that trigger, I'm assuming it's going to go to Billie Kay. I just don't see Peyton Royce being put in that role right now.
Moving on to the tag title match, we've got DIY, Gargano and Ciampa against the Authors of Pain. Is this as simple as the Authors of Pain kind of running over DIY with a couple hope spots?
I hope not. I mean, I hope they have something better in mind. I mean, I'm assuming we're going to get some return matches, you know, out of this at some point. But I guess, yeah. I mean, it seems like the way that they've been, you know, setting up the Authors of Pain has been, you know, they're just going to steamroll everybody. So I wouldn't be shocked if that was the case.
Nor would I. I would also be kind of happy to see DIY pull out the surprise win here, but I don't know that that's what they've set up the Authors of Pain to do. I kind of wonder if the Authors of Pain are a team that once they've lost one or lost a couple big ones, that they just sort of fade away. And given that Paul Ellering is there with them and all of that, I don't know that WWE wants them to fade away at this point. So I think I'm going to pick the Authors of Pain to win, and for it to be kind of depressing.
Yeah, I you know, it's hard to tell, you know, is WWE taking the tag division seriously anywhere else besides you know, NXT at this point? I mean, it seems like, you know, it would almost be, you want to see people graduate, but you don't want to see them go to a show where they don't have, you know, anybody taking the division seriously. So if we're going to see the Authors of Pain win here, I hope they're able to have some return matches with DIY and really build them up as something special rather than, you know, just continue to do the monster steamroll bit, because that only takes you so far. It's not like a next level thing.
Yeah, it's not something that you can do for a long period of time and have it work exceptionally well. So hopefully that's not the plan, but I kind of wouldn't be surprised to see the Authors of Pain just keep steamrolling until they came up against a tag team comprised of main eventers somehow, and then lose in that instance. But we'll see. Nakamura versus Bobby Roode. It's a singles match for the NXT Championship. I think this is as simple as Nakamura wins, and you get a stare down with Cassius Ohno at the end of the match.
I'm all for that. I don't see Bobby Roode winning in any scenario. I mean, I think they've done as good of a job as they can setting it up and having, you know, having him articulate his vision and his plan. And so I think he's done a nice job of sort of carrying the story end of it without them having to have Nakamura do too much on the microphone, because, you know, clearly he still, you know, struggles with that. So I think Nakamura wins. I think Cassius Ohno may be, you know, an interesting stare down to have at the end of this match. Do you think they're setting that up for Orlando? Is that the idea?
I think so. They did something very similar at the end of an NXT taping a while back and posted it all over the internet because they're WWE and they can't help themselves. And I kind of think that's a great match to set up for Orlando. It leaves a lot of room for, say, Nakamura to lose and go up to the main roster, and for them to still have a top wrestler in the world carrying that title. I don't see Roode I mean, I think Rude's peak in WWE is probably the NXT championship, but I also don't see Rude being the guy to hold that championship for a long period of time either. So I just see this as him getting a shot as filler, essentially.
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, I do think he's capable of holding a main roster championship. I don't know if it's a world championship, but I could see him being a United States or an Intercontinental champion at some point. But it really depends on their long-term plan for him. If he was just brought in to be a major player on NXT, or if they've been impressed enough with what he's been able to do with his character work to see the need to advance him.
By character work, you mean theme music?
Mostly, yeah.
I mean, it's great theme music, don't get me wrong. I left an NXT house show with coworkers blasting that song for the next week because of that great theme music. So I am not disparaging good theme music making Bobby Roode, but I ultimately think he's very, very gifted by that song. He is he has been handed a rather awesome thing, and Bobby Roode is justifying it in his performances, but I don't think he is altogether better than the music itself. I think this will be a fun show, but this is one of the first takeovers to me that feels missable. Like, if I don't see this show, I could probably go back and catch a couple matches off of it and feel fine, and that's strange to me, coming off of, especially in the first half of 2016, where every takeover felt must-see. I had to watch him. I was so into catching these shows. This one, it'll be good. I don't see it being amazing, though.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat. I mean, I think it's going to have some decent matches. I think the Strong and Almas match will probably impress people. The women's match will probably impress people. If the tag match is a squash, a glorified squash, I should say, I don't know how that will resonate. I'm sure you'll see a lot of very angry fanboys over that one. But I really am expecting good things from the main event. I think Rude is good enough. And Nakamura, of course, is, world class. So we'll see, some impressive stuff on this show. Even if you don't catch it live, it'll be worth going back to catch the main event at the very least.
I am kind of curious to see which Shinsuke shows up, because I think NXT has demonstrated there's big match Nakamura. And we saw this in Japan, too, but big match Nakamura is probably the best wrestler in the game. He's really fun to watch. There's a lot of dynamic excitement around him. And then there's taking it easy Shinsuke. There's the version of Nakamura that knows he can get away with not doing quite as much and doesn't. And I hope that what we get here is the big match Nakamura. But I think there's a part of me that goes, I don't know that Bobby Roode is quite up to that level. And a guy like Cassius Ohno, when he comes in for WrestleMania weekend, fingers crossed there, likely will be.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, I guess, there are instances where you could probably point to Shinsuke not bringing 100% to the table. But I think for takeovers, he's generally done so. I mean, he didn't have amazing chemistry with Samoa Joe, it seemed. And so I think some of those matches might have given the impression that he wasn't giving 100%. But I'm curious to see how things take off in the ring with Rude and if it's better. So I'm optimistic, but I'm not completely gonna say that it's gonna blow people's doors off or anything.
And with that, we will wrap up this show. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Stay tuned to ProWrestling.net for your coverage of NXT TakeOver San Antonio and the Rumble and Raw and SmackDown and basically every other wrestling show that will exist until the end of time.
Thank you for listening to this ProWrestling.net podcast. For more, make sure to subscribe to the show on iTunes, hit us up with a rating, and tell your friends. Also, please check out the goodness of ProWrestling.net membership. Bye!